We'll be looking at the two readings from the Old Testament and the reading from the Gospel, Jeremiah 23 and Luke chapter 23. In the Bible, kings are shepherds. Kings are shepherds over their people, and queens are shepherdesses over their people. And this is not just true of the Bible, though it is true of the Bible. If you read like ancient Near Eastern literature, like the Epic of Gilgamesh, Gilgamesh begins the great epic by saying, I am Gilgamesh, shepherd of my people, right? This is an ancient motif. Kings are shepherds over their people. And so, for instance, in places like Psalm 80, the psalmist says, Yahweh is the king who is simultaneously enthroned on the cherubim, and yet also he is the one who leads Israel like a shepherd leads his flock. We all know the famous Psalm 23, the Lord is my
shepherd.
Good. Right? We at least know this because we've gotten like a Hallmark get well card with like the Psalm 23 on it, right? God is a shepherd and God is a king. And we also see this in the people that God calls to lead his people. You see this image in a literal sense in folks like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. We sometimes forget because we get so deep into their personal story that Abraham and Jacob are nomad kings. When Caer Duleomer, the wicked king, grabs a bunch of people and rounds them up and raids them away, it says Abraham takes the 300 fighting men in his household. He's a king. He grabs his Bedouin knights and goes and chases down the other kings. They are nomad kings wandering with complex households, multitudes of fighting men, and they are shepherds whose main livelihood is the tending of flocks. Abraham is a king and a shepherd. Jacob is a king and a shepherd. Moses in Exodus 2 and Psalm 77 is referred to as a shepherd of Israel. Joshua in Numbers 27 is said to rule over Israel like a shepherd over sheep. Later, David is brought forth from caring for the sheep to be a king and shepherd over God's people. This is literally said in 2 Samuel chapter 5. David is a shepherd over God's people. Isaiah calls Cyrus the Great when Persia comes in and conquers Babylon and sends the exiles back. The prophet Isaiah in Isaiah 44 refers to Cyrus the Great as the shepherd over God's people. He's a king and a shepherd. Suffice it to say, when Jeremiah begins in chapter 23 with this prophetic condemnation of the shepherds of Israel, we ought to know who he has in mind. The kings of Jerusalem got mad, and they threw Jeremiah the prophet into a cistern, a deep pit in the ground. Say, what? Why are they so offended? He's just talking about shepherds. No, no, no. Everybody knows who he has in mind, because this is the way that God thinks of kings. Kings are supposed to be shepherds. Woe to the shepherds who are destroying and scattering the sheep of my pasture, declares the Lord. Jeremiah 23, verse 1. The worldly shepherds have treated the flock, get this, worldly kings, fleshly kings, worldly rulers, treat God's people, treat the flock like the flock exists for the shepherd. When in God's mind, the shepherd exists to lay down his life for the sheep. And God declares at the time that he's speaking in the last anxious days of the kingdom of Judah, before they go into exile in Babylon, I will punish your rulers for the abuse that they've committed against my flock. And then Yahweh promises to gather the remnant of the flock together from the places where it has been scattered. Over this remnant, this new flock that Yahweh is gathering during the exile, he promises to give them shepherds who will shepherd them, which means kings, rulers, leaders, who will shepherd them like him, who is the good shepherd of his people. He's going to raise up good shepherds. And then at the end of the section that we heard, Jeremiah 23 concludes with what seems like a change of subject. God's going to give him a king, unless we remember that kings are shepherds. The days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will raise up for David a righteous branch, a king who will reign wisely and do what is just and right in the lands. The children of Israel go into exile with the promise. We see it in Jeremiah. We hear it again in a disciple of Jeremiah, a prophet named Ezekiel in Ezekiel 34. declaring that God will give us a great shepherd who will lay down his life for the flock. And then because of that, God's going to give us new shepherds who will shepherd us like God does. Our gospelism picks up with Jesus on the branches of the cross. We see Jesus hanging on the cross. What is he doing? He's not merely satisfying some abstract Old Testament forensic demand. He is displaying to us that he is the good shepherd. Why? This is what a good shepherd does. He lays down his life for the sheep. Here, Jesus is doing the thing that marks him not only as the true shepherd, but also as the true shepherd. In John 10, Jesus tells the crowd, "I am the good shepherd." And he adds, as evidence for that claim, how do we know that he's the good shepherd? What proof does Jesus offer that he really is the good shepherd? He says, "You know that I'm the good shepherd because I lay down my life for the sheep." When Jesus says this in John chapter 10, "I'm the good shepherd," again, just like Jeremiah, there's massive political implications. If you were a Sadducee, somebody who governed the temple, you ruled your people, and you hear Jesus showing up and grabbing the language of Jeremiah 23 and Ezekiel 34 and saying, "I'm the good shepherd, I'm not like the bad shepherds," you would understand why the Sadducees wanted to hang Jesus on a cross and kill him. This is the good shepherd who lays down his life. In Luke 23, we gaze upon the Lord crucified on the cross. In all eyes, he is just another criminal suffering his just penalty. The groans of the dying Jesus to a bystander would be undifferentiated from the groans of any other agonizing criminal. And yet, here he is on his throne, which is the cross, doing the truly kingly thing, laying down his life for his flock. This is what it means to reign over Israel. This is what it means to rule wisely and to do what is just in the land. It means to be laid upon the cross. We know the famous line of the centurion who kneels when Christ is crucified and says, "Truly this was the Son of God." Seeing Christ in this light, we can add to what the centurion says. Truly, this man is the good shepherd. Truly, this man is what the sign above his head tells us, the King of the Jews and the King of the whole world. Truly, this man is the Son of the Father that the Father gave for the life of the world. God has been faithful to his promises in the gift of Jesus. Today is Christ the King Sunday. You heard James talk about that. Christ the King Sunday. It is both the end of the liturgical calendar and the beginning of the liturgical calendar. This today is what all our calendar has led us to. All of the story that we've been telling has been a story celebrating that Christ has become King. Christ is fully God and he is fully King. And it is from this day, from the proclamation of the gospel, that Jesus, the Son of God, has been made King over the world, that our next year flows out. We realize today that this is what our calendar has always really been about. The liturgical calendar functions like a Mobius loop, for anybody who's into theoretical mathematics, right? It folds in on itself, it wraps around and deepens with each cycle of the year. We realize just more and more and more God's kingship and his great love over us. Jesus Christ is King and God. To this, all of our years have led us, and all of our years will remind us. This is all of our hopes for the coming year lie in this. He is the Good Shepherd. Revelation 7 gives us this vision of a multitude without number, dressed in white, having come out of the great tribulation of this age, who shall not want any longer. For, John is told in Revelation, the Lamb who is at the center of the throne will be their shepherd. He will lead them to springs of water, and God will wipe every tear from their eyes. You have been baptized into the flock of this good shepherd King. For many of us, it feels like this is nice to think about, but maybe it doesn't line up with our experience of rulers or shepherds or kings or queens or people put in authority over us. Our general experience of those in authority over us is rarely one of qualitative goodness of them laying down their lives for us. And the experience of failure from our worldly rulers can create a bitterness where we question whether there ought to be shepherds. I don't even believe in leaders. I've seen it ruined too much. I don't believe in pastors. I've seen too many pastors fall. I'm done with trusting in men or women to rule and lead me. It's all a joke, all a big lie. Me for myself, like that scene in C.S. Lewis's Last Battle. The dwarves are for the dwarves, right? Is there really even a thing as a good shepherd? But to understand what this does when we think that the failures of the shepherds in our lives, when it causes us to question whether there should be shepherds, it's actually not as powerful as the far more prophetic claim that Christ is the good shepherd. Our disappointment becomes prophetic and hopeful instead of despondent and hopeless when we say, I know that you're not what is meant by a good shepherd because I know the goodness of the one who really is the good shepherd. There is a king enthroned upon the cherubim. There is a good shepherd, and precisely because there is a king, precisely because I believe in a good shepherd, we groan with frustration as we long for his appearing. Dawson, Marina, Brad, Tiana, today you bring your children to the good shepherd. To the King of Heaven, to the Lord of all the shepherd kings, to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And the promise for you today, the promise that I give you guys today, is that the king you bring him to is the good shepherd. The God that you bring your children to today in baptism is the one who lays down his life for the sheep. He is the one whose rod and staff guard and discipline and guide us. He is the one who leaves the 99 to find the lost sheep. He is the one who, as John tells us in chapter 10 of the gospel, he is the one who will not lose any of those the Father has given him. Parenting is wildly frustrating and difficult. The promise that you receive today is not to pretend like it's not difficult. To make sure to keep all your stuff in order so that when you show up to church, your family acts nice for the space of 90 minutes. The promise that the Father gives you today, when in your long years of parenting as under shepherds over your children, you struggle and stumble, when you grow weary of parenting, when you begin to worry over your children in the way that only parents know how to worry. Am I messing everything up for this child? When your own strength gives out, when you wrestle with your children in seasons of difficulty or rebellion, when you set them loose in the world and your heart falters, wondering if you've done all the right things. When you wonder about their story and worry about how their story is going to end. When you are tempted to try to do things to control their story so that it ends the way you think you purchased by giving them a good Christian education. When you worry about how their story ends, know this. Your children belong to the Good Shepherd. They belong to the God of Israel. They belong to the life himself who poured out his life on Calvary for them. And that this Good Shepherd will be faithful. He will go after them. Think on this all your days. Tell one another this. Really, tell one another this all the time. Remember, Brad, remember Tiana, remember Marina, remember Dawson. Our children belong to the Good Shepherd. Sing this over your children all the days of their life. You, Kaeo, Elena, Ada, you belong to the Good Shepherd. The Lord is your shepherd. Surely goodness and mercy will follow you all the days of your life, and you shall wake in the house of God forever. Oh, come, let us adore him. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.